I think more of the background is necessary, though. And you mentioned about the first international human rights movement in United States history in the 1890s. Names like Julia Ward Howe, Clara Barton, the head of the Red Cross, Alice Stone Blackwell, Lucy Stone. Reading of, the women active in women's suffrage movement.
Right. Yes. I think it's very important to note that the women's suffrage movement, as you mentioned, Julia Ward Howe, Isabel Barrows, Alice Stone Blackwell, Lucy Stone, and others, Charlotte Perkins Gilman, got deeply involved in the Armenian cause, in part because they were just overwhelmed with the sexual violence to which Armenian Christian women were subjected. The eyewitness accounts, as well as the survivor accounts of rape and sexual torture, were astounding. I mean, things like this simply had not happened in at these levels of numbers.
Or hadn't been reported.
I mean, they happened. But the 200,000 dead in 2 years may be unprecedented for its day.
Yeah, but you also talk about how the first series of massacres in the 1890s were also the focus of the beginning of modern human rights reporting. And
that's right.
New York, all over the New York Times, 145, 150 articles in the span of a year or two.
That's right. That's true. I think the coverage of the Armenian atrocities did inaugurate a new age of journalism. And I also think a lot of the intellectuals and reformers who got involved with the Armenian cause in the 1890s had come out of abolitionism. They had been shaped by the moral dimensions of political thinking that abolitionism had spawned. And this was almost a logical transformation for them to get involved in this particular international movement.
You mentioned Native Americans early in the interview. Let's talk about that. In the 1890s, just as the Turks are perpetrating these horrible crimes against Armenians, we were doing something very similar in the American West in Wounded Knee in 1894, I think it was.
Right.
Very similar to the kinds of reports that we get from Armenia at the same time.
Yeah, the ironies here are serious, and the hypocrisies are real, obviously. Also, the lynching of African Americans is a national institution. The extermination of Native Americans is happening year in and year out. And it's interesting in the psychology of American culture that it, in some way, it transferred some of its, responsibility for human rights issues to an international arena. However, I would say about people like Julia Ward Howe and the suffrage movement reformers, that they were, poignantly engaged in the abuses that were going on at home to African Americans and Native Americans. But I think there was a larger Victorian Christian culture that was blind to the genocidal episodes at home and was pouring their heart out to Armenians 8,000 miles away. Yeah, it's ironic.
But the average school child, in a public school in America in the 1890s, knew very well what was going on. Huge sums of money raised in the 1890s, and then later in the pre World War I period for Armenians. This was very much a part of the knowledge, the awareness of the American culture.
Right. It was a kind of weekly reader. If some of our listeners can remember weekly readers from my childhood. The Armenian massacres had a kind of weekly reader visibility for the American school child. Yes, it was something that kids were told they had to clean their plates because the starving Armenians were so unfortunate and this sort of thing.
$100 million raised in the early part of the 20th century?
More than $110 million raised by Near East Relief, which began significantly as the American Committee on Armenian Atrocities in 1915, then became Near East Relief. And before it was all over, yes, Near East Relief would have sent $110 million to the needy Christians of the Ottoman Empire, mostly to the Armenians. And if you tabulate that by today's currency, you get $2.5 billion. That's an extraordinary movement. It was both a grassroots movement as well as a movement funded by philanthropists and industrialists like the Rockefellers and the Rockefeller Foundation. Spencer Trask and others.
You know, the response of the American people, $110 million is just amazing. Let's get a sense of what the difference is in your eyes between the America of the 1890s and the country we know today. President Bush used some of Saddam Hussein's atrocities to justify war to the American people. The American people, by and large, were in support of that in terms of public opinion. What's the difference between the America of 1895 and the America of 2003?
Well, in some sense, there are many ways of approaching your question. In one sense, I want to note that I think we're still stuck in the same murky, directionless place when it comes to acting for international human rights. I mean, my book, in part, tells a story of gridlock, a story about a human rights movement emanating from the grassroots, from NGOs like the Red Cross and Near East Relief, from an enormous amount of passion and will and generosity from the people. But when that movement got to the State Department and the White House, it hit a stone wall. The American government was never willing to intervene to help stop the Armenian massacres, and this enraged Teddy Roosevelt, who criticized Woodrow Wilson for refusing to do so during World War I.
In fact, it might have been one of the last acts of Teddy's life to comment on this. Describe that.
You're right. It's interesting. Theodore Roosevelt was deeply interested in the Armenian crisis from the 1890s on. He wrote dozens of letters about this to his friends. And during World War I, he chastised Woodrow Wilson because Wilson refused to declare war on Turkey, the only central power we didn't declare war on. Why didn't Wilson declare war on Turkey? Roosevelt knew very well why, because the Protestant missionaries, those very people who had been helping the Armenians for so long in the Ottoman Empire, now when push came to shove, they were afraid that if Turkey went to war with the United States, all of their $200 million worth of real estate would be destroyed. This just enraged Roosevelt, and he wrote about it quite passionately. And yes, the very last thing it appears that he wrote, the last thing in his hand before he died in his sleep of a heart attack in January of 1918, was a letter of acceptance to the big gala at the Plaza Hotel for the new Armenian Republic, which was then at least a hope in the post-war world.
Well, there's more to discuss regarding America's response, certainly, and more details about the Armenian genocide, and as we move into the 1890s to the 1900s. And we'll chat with Peter about that. Our guest is Peter Balakian. He is the author of The Burning Tigris, The Armenian Genocide and America's Response. For more information, you can go to his website, peterbalakianbooks.com.
Global Voices Radio.